The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week, your host, Matt Ardill, is joined by writer, actor, comedian, and all-around awesome human being, Ali Hassan, where they talk about Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. It's Matt Ardill, the host of Comedy Album Book Club. As you may have noticed, we've been on a bit of an extended leave due to changes in the lineup, personal experiences, and, well, the whole world shutting down for a few years. I pulled the emergency brake, but the world keeps on turning and people keep on laughing. So I was able to find a way to bring back Comedy Album Book Club. Now, you may have noticed the format's a little bit different. We're a little bit shorter, but it's also a little bit more intimate. So I'm hoping you enjoy these conversations as much as you enjoyed our old episodes. We're kicking off the new season with an amazing guest talking about an awesome album. This episode, I'm joined by Ali Hassan, Toronto-based comedian who you may know from shows like Run the Burbs, his appearances at the Just for Last Comedy Festival, or as a recurring guest on Q, or maybe his book, Is There Bacon in Heaven? He and I chatted about Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Mike Birbiglia was born June 20th, 1978, and he's been working as a professional comedian since 1997. He got a taste for the comedy world after doing improv and then starting work at Conan, before embarking on his own comedy journey that eventually led to a recurring guest spot at The Moth in New York. A respected storyteller and comedian, he achieved mainstream success with his appearance on This American Life, doing a segment from his Sleepwalk With Me, which was a one-man show that was adapted later into a film. In 2011, he mounted My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, another one-man show, this time about his journey into relationships. Enjoy as Ali and I chat about Mike's amazing ability as a storyteller and the power this one-man show has over its audience. Thank you for coming to Comedy Album Book Club. I am joined by Ali Hassan, comedian, actor, performer, awesome guy who you can see all over Canada doing comedy, as well as on CBC's Run the Burbs. Thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure, Matthew. This is exciting. This is a great idea. This concept that you have for this show is tremendously exciting. I always get a little sheepish about my credits, and this is the one time I'm going to mention a credit you didn't mention for one reason only, is that I also teach a class on stand-up comedy at Queen's University.
Oh.
And I could teach an entire semester on what you're doing. We could do every class just one comedy album. So you're kind of like, you know, as far as this concept of nerding out goes, I'm right here with you, and I love it. And I hope your listeners are as excited as the two of us are. I think this is great.
I'm really great glad to be able to nerd out with you on this.
In fact, it was like Sophie's choice. You're like, hey, well, how about picking an album? I'm like, oh my God. I mean, how do I? It's like picking my favorite child.
Oh yeah. I mean, it can vary depending on the mood of that you're in on any given day.
Yeah,
like some days it's like, oh, I'm going for like something a little bit more, rambunctious and energy, full of energy. Sometimes I want something a little bit more heartfelt. And you chose a very heartfelt album.
I did.
And special Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, from 2013. So what inspired you to choose this album?
Well, you know, there's a bunch of albums when I was starting comedy that I really loved. Dave Chappelle had this album from San Francisco, For What It's Worth, or What It's Worth, I think it's called. Dane Cook, believe it or not, had an album that he recorded in Dallas that was really, I never saw Dane Cook. I didn't know what he looked like. I just had the audio version, and just his like jokes about, you know, his brother working at Burger King, and then they put him on the drive-through, and he goes, we would have people drive up to the box and they'd be, okay, that's $8.99. And then the person would be like, where do I go? Where do you go? You take the one road you're on to me. I remember finding that so funny. And so, as you say, there's like all these influences over time, and in the beginning of my comedy, those were definitely there. The most definitive thing that I've ever watched, experienced, and then studied was this special. And I'll tell you why, because I was doing clubs and I was starting to headline clubs on a regular basis. But, you know, the comedy club is such that, you know, sometimes you take your art seriously and you're like, oh, I've got this 15-minute chunk I really want to work on. And I have that other stuff I know works, and I'm cushioning this stuff, and I really think I'm onto something, and this could be part of my next 45-minute. And then you get to the club and you find out, you know, there's a bachelorette party in the front row, and the bachelorette is wearing a headband that has a fluorescent dildo attached to it. So guess what? You're not doing your 15 minutes. It is all about the headband dildo, which is fluorescent and oscillating. And you're like, I guess my 15 minutes, you know, you can't be precious about your material. But I was starting to envision my life beyond clubs. I really wanted to do soft seat theaters, but I was like, ah, that's crazy talk. How would I ever do that? You know, at the same time, my son would have been 3 or 4 at the time, asking me questions about Islam. And I'm woefully unprepared to answer those questions. And he's kind of badgering me. And he's like, you know, how come you don't go to the mosque? I'm like, whatever, dude, you don't go to the mosque. None of us go to the, you know, it's like this push and pull with this kid who's trying to discover his identity. And I would go on stage and complain about it a bit, and it would get really good laughs. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I would talk about like my own connection to Islam and why I'm so unprepared to answer a 4-year-old's question. And I would talk a little bit about Islamic Sunday school that I went to, you know, and I would talk about like, I'm not qualified to answer these questions because of my love for pepperoni. And I would talk about that. And then I noticed that people were, this is 2015-ish, you know, people are staying after the show to talk to me. Now, it would happen at a club. The most you would get would be like, hey, thank you so much. Had a really rough week. I really needed a laugh. Thank you. That was the extent of it, you know? But this was like a different thing. People are staying behind and they want to talk to me to tell me that, oh, I didn't know Muslims went to Sunday school. I was raised Greek Orthodox and we would go to Friday Sunday school, our religious school after a long week. Friday after school, we would go to more school. I'd be, oh, that's interesting. And they would just stay to tell me. Somebody would be like, hey, we grew up Croatian and we would go on Saturdays to Croatian school. It was also a terrible memory I have. I just wanted to share that with you. And it would happen more and more. And I'd be like, these people, I'm making a connection with people. This is wild, you know? And as I say, it's not like I never made a connection, but this, like, people waiting to talk to me was a new thing. And in my mind, all I was doing was really complaining about my children and their questions. But it got so enjoyable, and I'm doing this like storytelling material, which I really like, and working with like a little bit more silence and this and that.
Yeah.
And I start thinking, maybe I have a solo show on my hands. Like, I have at least 15 to 20 minutes about my love of pepperoni. Then I have my kids asking me this, but I'm like, a solo show. How do you even do a solo show? How would I, with no theater training, with no real stage training, how would a guy like me even do a solo show? And then 2015, I see, and I don't even know, it must have been on early Netflix, you know? I see Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend. And I had heard Mike Birbiglia, again, audio only, on the radio shows, driving home in the car. I would hear this guy. He had this sort of sheepish, like, you know, kind of a yokel and like this style, which I then learned was, that is an act if I've ever seen one. Yeah. This is an incredibly competent, confident human being underneath that whole thing, you know. But I see My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. And, you know, I wrote a letter to Mike about it a couple of years ago, just to tell you how much this had an impact on me. And I've never written a letter to any comedian ever. Mm-hmm. I started like being so inspired. I was watching it, and I think I watched it 3 times in one weekend and just like studied it. Like, look at how he started. Look at how he ended. Look at how he used the silences. Look at how he turned serious moments into a joke, breaking the tension in the room. Look at the storytelling, and how do you make something like this funny? And that, look at how he used the prop, the screen comes down to illustrate, because part of you the entire time, you don't even realize, but a part of you is this not real?
Yeah.
You know, is this a Hasan Minhaj thing? Is this like, do we know if this happened or not? And he pulls down the police report at one point, and the whole crowd is like, oh my God, it's real. And like, you have this collective moment of like, everybody was thinking the same thing. It was wild. And it was like, you know, you don't know anybody who's done something. So you're like, oh, I probably can't do it. And then finally you meet somebody who's done something and you're like, oh, if they did it, maybe I can do this too. So it was incredibly inspiring. Mm-hmm. And just to tell you why I wrote the letter to Mike Birbiglia is because that show that I developed, I took it to Edinburgh mm-hmm. in 2016. And then in 27, and so that was about, it was about 50, 55 minutes. I built it up to be a 90-minute show. And then I turned it into a show called Muslim Interrupted. And I toured the country. I went to about 30 different cities between 2017 and 2020. And the last show I did was just like 4 days before the pandemic shut everything down. But it was my planned last show. It was a weird, like, this is the final.
Yeah.
And that show, you know, I had a PR agent that I had hired for the touring. He left to go into PR for books. He was in lit PR as opposed to personal PR. And he said, hey, if you ever want to write a book, you already have this 90-minute show. If you ever want to write a book, just let me know. I hope we can work together again. And so I was like, ah, is that just something nice somebody says, you know? Then I actually called him a few months later and I was like, were you serious about that? He was like, 100%. I'm going to introduce you to an editor. He was like, Ali, people write a book with a tiny kernel of an idea and then they build this whole world. You have a 90-minute stage show. And so I wrote this book published by Simon & Schuster a couple of years ago, 2 falls ago. And then, you know, started teaching and I'm teaching about this show. And then I'm, you know, touring another solo show, right? And all that, I honestly give so much credit to the timing of what was going on in my life and my discovery of My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. So this show, I would be happy to talk about, you know, the nitty gritty of this show with you, but it's a very long answer, Matthew. I apologize to the question. Why did you pick this? It is like a seminal piece of work in my life. I you know, I'm sure it is in Mike Birbiglia's life too, but for me, it was like truly something. The timing could not have been more incredible. Yeah.
And I mean, and that synchronicity of it coming into your life in that moment. I mean, a lot of people are just like, oh, I think it's a cool album or I like this one joke. But I mean, it just speaks to the profound impact that comedy can have on a person, and the right comedy in the right moment.
Yeah.
And how it helped you envision this greater work that you're able to turn into a stage play and a one-man show and then a book. That's amazing. You know,
it's no different from music. And I never thought of it in these terms, but you know, the way a song makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, how are you feeling at the time 20 years ago when you heard it has so much, right? And somebody goes, oh, I hate that song. You go, what? How are you just going to brush away? That's one of Bruce Springsteen's greatest songs. And when he comes in with this, and then you realize like, oh, it's probably who I was with when I heard it, what company I was in, what period of my life I was in, what type of things I was doing, and how happy I was as a human being. And that's what makes me. And then you go see the concert, and the concert just makes you love the song even more. And then you have no money, but the little money you have, you buy the album, and then the album's great. And you're just all these building blocks. Yeah. For people who don't think comedy can have that influence, I really think it's like not too different from the way music affects us or can affect us and impact on us.
Now, one of the things you mentioned was the use of quiet. And I mean, so much comedy is like hit. And, you know, Mike, it's interesting how he works it, because he'll work little bits in little snippets and then laces it together to be this like almost like a quilt of comedy. But he just knows how to use that emptiness to build the tension. So when you get that release, it's so satisfying.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah,
I totally agree. It's jokes in inside jokes. It's like bacon wrapped scallops of jokes, right? It's like you're not even, you've even sort of forgotten. That was the thing that I really loved too. You've even sort of forgotten, what were we talking about again? But he's there to guide you and bring you back. You're like, why are we talking about a wrestling team you were? Oh yeah, Jenny. We're talking about Jenny. But why are we talking about Jenny? This Jenny was part of something. Oh, the car accident. Oh my God. The culinary description of a car accident, the T-bone, getting T-bone. Oh yeah. And every time he sort of brings you back, it's like this gratitude, like, thank you for keeping us on track. Of course, that's his job to do that.
Yeah.
But you feel like, oh, man, thank you. Yes, yes. And you feel like you're in the presence of this incredible brilliance as well, you know, that you crafted this show to take us on this journey. And, I would hate for somebody to – I'm also very big, like when it comes to music, I used to be like, okay, this band is great, but you have to listen to this album first. Then you go to this, then you go, right? Like it's, you got to hear that. And the same thing, like Bill Burr, somebody's like, oh, I'm going to look up Bill Burr. I'm like, well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Don't start with an interview he's doing with Conan, because you're going to be like, oh, this guy's a bit abrasive. Start with his first like Comedy Central special, when he's talking about like, I'm a loser. I was on the futon all day, you know, and I'm watching Cribs, and Britney Spears has this helicopter, and Britney Spears is like, I put some glitter on that part of the helicopter. And you know that, I mean, that's my first exposure to Bill Burr. And then every album just builds and builds and builds. And then you see like who he is on. I just want everybody to go through that experience. So every time, you know, with my students, I'm like, Mike Birbiglia, do not, it's like with a textbook, don't read ahead. Don't read anything else. Just read what you're supposed to read. So I'm very much like, you know, don't start with My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, and then you build, you know, even the his latest, The Old Man in the Pool, which Matthew, I think you went to see it, right?
Yeah, I saw it just down the street from me. It was at the theater here, and it's just such a powerful show. And it feels like, and that's what I love is like, you go back to Sleepwalk With Me and he's, it feels like he's building as a storyteller and as a comedian. It just, every performance gets exponentially better. Like he brings some new new trick, or not trick, but just new technique to the stage.
Yeah. Yeah. A technique is a great way to say it. And, you know, I don't want to spoil this special if you haven't seen it yet. I'm willing to spoil My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. It's been 11 years. Okay. Come on, people, folks, come on. But the latest, The Old Man in the Pool, you know, I listened to his podcast. So I love the evolution of that too, because it was called the YMCA pool. Mm-hmm. And then he made it, you know, the ode to Hemingway sort of thing, The Old Man in the Pool. And he was testing some of his jokes on the podcast. And then I see what those have become in the show, and the background of the show. I know it's not simple. Like, it took somebody with an engineering brain to create that little, that ramp, which is the pool. But it is relatively simple. It's not a huge adorn. There's no fireworks going off, right? It's not Kevin Hart going bam fireworks. Yeah. Every time he tells a joke and stuff, which, you know, of course I love that as well, but compared to what, a comedian could do with the background on their stage, this looks so simple, but used to its fullest potential. I mean, really, like, how many times did he get on that wave, and how many times? So sometimes it was for goofiness, sometimes it was for like depth, sometimes it was to hammer home a point. I mean, really. But he also, you know, Mike Birbiglia works with some of the best. He has Seth Barish, who is this incredible acting coach. He's got Ira Glass from This American Life, who I don't know if he's his dramaturge or his, you know, he's not the director, but he's, you know, helps him co-write. I mean, he's just got he's surrounded himself with the best of the best. Yeah. And that's what I was alluding to earlier also, where I thought he was just kind of like a bit of a schlub. His jokes were very self-deprecating back in the early 2000s, especially. And then you come to learn, like, this is actually a workaholic. Proudly so. He's like, I know people are like, hey, workaholism is a serious thing. It's no good for you. And he's like, well, I understand that. But also, nobody I know who's achieved any real success in this world of comedy was anything short of a workaholic. So it's the only way. That's his thing. He's sort of like unapologetic about it. Like, this is how you get things done. And it was just him and his brother for a while. They've got a team of, like, you know, several people who write jokes together, who tour together, who are like constantly. And I mean, he's running a business. Mm-hmm. He's effectively running a business. You know, I get the newsletter. I see the different things, like on the tour bus activity, the merch thing. I mean, it's really just one of the most impressive things, because I feel like I've been watching and listening to this career form and take shape since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. I lived in Montreal, and every night at 11, my friend Joey Elias, fantastic comic from Montreal, Joey Elias would do the, I don't remember what it was called, but it was like called Ernie Butler's Comedy Show or something like that. Okay. And then Ernie passed away. It still had the name, but it eventually just became the CJAD. It was the AM radio comedy show. And now, of course, we have Sirius XM. We have Funny 820, depending where you live, Funny 520, Funny 1080, depending on what city you're at, right? So this is like, now you have radio, comedy radio all the time. Mm-hmm. But this was not the case back then. This was 1 hour, 11 to 12. And sometimes I'd even ask to go on early on a show so I could get in the car by 11 just to listen to some of these comedians. And that was my exposure to a lot of these comedians. And Mike Birbiglia was one of them. And I remember those jokes. Just hit, one of his jokes was about how bad he bombed at some, like, sports event where they were honoring some athlete, and he didn't really know the athlete that well. And it was like, they were all there for the athlete and not 1% in the least bit for Mike Birbiglia. And so the self-deprecation and the vivid storytelling, I remember it from an early age. And then you just watch this guy surround himself with the best of the best. Yeah. And every skill he has, you know, in My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, there's a moment that I really love. But he's you know, my girlfriend's boyfriend also, he goes into like this schlubby character. No girl really ever wanted to kiss me. I'm, you know, suggestions of like chronic masturbation and this kind of stuff. And then at one point he's kind of in that stage character of his. And he goes, okay, excuse me, hold on 1 second. And he jumps into the crowd.
Yes.
And he takes someone's bare foot and he holds up the guy's bare foot. And he goes, really? Really? Said, this is Seattle. This is Seattle for you. Who are you people? No socks, no shoes, just bare feet? Yeah. Who are you people? And then he looks at some other guy. He goes, I would expect this from you, sir, but not you. And I was like, oh, hold on. This, like, his confidence, he left the stage character and jumped into another level of mastery that I felt he had, which is crowd work and operating like off the cuff stuff, you know. And again, I've watched the special way too many times probably, but you just see all these different facets of this guy. He's not just a great storyteller. So anyway, I can't say enough great things about this guy.
And I was going to bring that up too, because, you know, so many storyteller comedians will just be in the story and not, you know, and not in the moment. And he is in both, you know, and he straddles that line so incredibly. I mean, I find it awesome that one of the, like, I also fell.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In love with comedy, over the radio. Chum, way back in the day, used to do, it was Dr. Demento and a comedy hour followed by Dr. Demento, and then like old-timey radio plays like the, you know, the Green Hornet and The Shadow and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was Sunday night, so I'd stay up super late when I should really be getting to sleep to go to school the next day, listening to like, you know, old, you know, this mix of old and new comedy in the 80s. And there's just something magical about that, because it strips away like everything. It's just you and the words.
Yeah.
And that, and like, that's one of the things that I find really incredible about Mike, is he has a mastery of these words as well. Like when he gets into like how, you know, the ride, and starts like the goes through these different variations of the name of the ride.
You mean the Scrambler?
Yeah. Before he eventually reaching out the Scrambler, like the Dianator. Yes. And it's like the, that's a callback to its original purpose for diary. And it's like, it's eventually funny, getting to the Scrambler. And
yeah,
it's kind of neat though, in a way, because he uses the stage during, when he's doing that act out, like the entire stage, but in a way, the entire performance is sort of, and is allegorically tied to the Scrambler, because it's like his life is getting scrambled in this moment. Like he's starting at the end, going back to the beginning, and going through like how he got to that point, and then how he let it go. And it's just so amazing. It's just, I loved every moment of it.
I agree with you, man. And, you know, you're touching on something else too, that is, inspirational to me. You know, I, like any person, you struggle with a variety of things. And as I said, back in 2015, struggling with my identity a little bit, and how do I raise these kids? What do I teach them? I know very little about religion. They're going to know even less. But then even personal issues like body issues, how come I can't commit to like losing weight? I've been told I have a fatty liver. I've been told I have high cholesterol. Now I have children. Why am I not getting in shape for these people? You know, why will my hair not grow back? Why am I a bald person? Why am I this and that? And you can get wrapped up in that. And then you see somebody like Mike, who has this debilitating, not debilitating, but, you know, it's under control, but let's say frightening, at the very least, this very frightening sleepwalking condition.
Yeah.
And a few other health conditions, and It's like you jumped out of a window. You picked shards of glass out of your body and then drove yourself. Like, that's unbelievably frightening. You had cancer at a very young age. You're very concerned about that, as your family was, as they should have been and would have been, all these kind of things. And you mined it all for humor.
Yeah.
And I think he gave me that permission, unbeknownst to him. Obviously, he gave me this permission to be like, if you can make it funny, it'll be funny. You can find a way and make it funny. And I think that was another big thing, because I was self-censoring myself in the sense that nobody wants to hear about that. It's not really that funny. And I have the comedy club training. You know, I've been doing comedy clubs for whatever it would have been, almost a decade at that point, let's say 8-9 years, exclusively comedy clubs. And, you know, you've got the word comedy behind you when you're on a comedy, like the comedy nest, the comedy zone, the comedy whatever. It's right there. And it's a reminder to the audience, like, hey, this guy hasn't made us laugh in 45 seconds. What's going on here? The punchline better be a huge payoff. And, you know, you go 60 seconds without a laugh in a comedy club, people, as they should, feel a little bit cheated, you know? Like, hey, he was all right, this person. But once you get into this world of storytelling and solo shows, and you see the power of that, I used to listen to NPR has a show called the Moth Radio Hour. And one of my greatest thrills in life was just in February of this year, I performed at a Moth event in Cincinnati.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And you know what? That is also because of the book. I wrote the book. My publisher had some connection to one of the producers of the Moth, introduced me. She said, okay, I'll have a conversation with him. Again, tracing back to Mike Birbiglia in a way, you know, that I got to perform on this thing I've been listening to since I was a teenager. And that's where I, like the way you love the intimate medium of radio. Radio was, you know, I would not have considered it an intimate medium as a teenager, because I used to wake up, my alarm was set to radio, and I woke up to the Spirit of Rock, Shom FM, and it was like Led Zeppelin and then the DJs cackling with laughter about God knows what. They just seemed like drunk and high in the morning, and it was kind of insane, right? It's one of those classic Jimmy and the Dog in the Mornings or whatever. It's like one of those kind of things.
Yep. It's like they get all of the frat boys to like lined up and like, okay, you're going to be going to Toronto for the morning show. You're going to Montreal for the morning show. We're sending you to Alberta.
Yeah. I sort of watched a lot of these folks grow older and grow into like more mature versions of themselves. But back in the 80s, it was wild radio. It was not an intimate medium for me, even though it was for many people if they knew where to look. And back then, my dad would put it on the CBC and my eyes could not roll back further into my head. I'm like, oh, God. One of my friends, Asif, who I host a podcast with, my buddy, Dr. Asif Doja, and I have this Doctor versus Comedian podcast that we do. And he's always like, I wonder if you can trace back the time where it went from, oh, God, my dad's putting it on the CBC, to you turning the radio to, oh, where's the CBC again? Like, when did that switch? What happened in your life? What is that moment?
Yeah.
But before the CBC, I lived in Montreal. And growing up in Montreal, on the south shore of Montreal, we were, I don't know, maybe 40 minutes from the Vermont border. Mm-hmm. So Vermont Public Radio carried NPR, VPR, or, you know, NPR, division of VPR, whatever it was. And so you would get This American Life, or you would get the Moth Storytelling Hour. And that's where I learned the beauty of radio. It's like just this one person speaking to me. And there were many times I just couldn't get out of the car. There's such a compelling story. I was telling somebody about this the other day. You know, my mother probably would have been looking out the living room window like, why is my son crying in the car in the in the driveway, probably thinking I had some girl trouble. Meanwhile, I'm like, no, it's this story. This dude lost his daughter. This dude, his daughter got cancer 3 times before the age of 10. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable, the power of storytelling in that medium. And I think Mike Birbiglia was the comedy that I loved with some of that storytelling that I first fell in love with, that made me also fall in love with radio and yeah. and you know the intimacy of this sort of this medium. So it just everything kind of came together, and it was really something great. And as far as storytelling goes, you know, all I really knew about storytelling was intro, body, conclusion. That's all I really knew. And that's how I would have structured a show. If somebody was like, hey, we're giving you 45 minutes, you got your own show. I had nowhere to look for any particular role models. I'd watched a few here and there. You know, I think John Leguizamo had one of his Freak yeah. It was before 2015. I'd seen, you know, these things. But those are like erratic. Those are like you're doing so many characters and it's this person and that person. And it's a phenomenal performance, keeping all the voices in your head. But Mike, I saw masterful storytelling. Yeah. I truly saw masterful storytelling when I saw this special.
I find it kind of interesting because, like, I feel Mike is, like, coming out of the alt comedy world of, you know, people like Patton Oswalt or...
Maria Bamford.
Maria Bamford. I've seen her 6 times in real yeah. life. How am I space? This is the. I have health issues. I have like epilepsy. And this is the epilepsy. It's all the Aaron Bridge.
Yeah.
It's like yeah. It's all. But you know, setting that aside, Maria Bamford. All these people who've taken moments of pain and mined it in a way that is confessional but not self-indulgent. Because there's this balancing act that I think, you know, a lot of old school comedians are like, oh, you can't go there. People won't care. And it's like, well, you can, because yeah. everybody struggles. Everybody has their thing that they fight against or try to find a balance with or try to work out. You know, it could be a relationship with a partner. It could be a relationship with a family member. It could be a health issue. And if you can share your, you know, struggle. You know, like you're sharing your relationships with your child and your faith, that lets a person know, you know what? Hey, I'm not alone. Mm. You know, and it's something I found magical to come out of that movement. And it's there's a pushback against it right now. It feels.
I think there was. I think occasionally, you know, Hannah Gadsby will come out with a special like Nanette. I thought that was peak pushback. People yes. were like, it's not funny. And I'm like, well, it's interesting. You know, I don't know if I laughed more than once or twice watching Nanette, but you can't underestimate the power of this special. Now, I think the thing people were saying was it's like, you know, they were it reminds me of like when veganism came out and people were like, well, don't say it tastes just like a hot dog. It does not taste just like a hot dog. It's something else. And you say it's a vegan log and then I'm with you. But if you say the hot dog, then I'm mad at you. Yeah. So I think people were like, don't call that comedy. It's not really comedy. I think there is space for everybody. And I'll tell you yeah. that, you know, I hold Bill Burr in the highest regard. Love this man. I remember hearing him make fun of the alt scene. Mm-hmm. And I was on board with what he said, because he said, I don't like the alt scene because I don't like this idea of people going into a club and it's like a nice warm embrace. He goes, you should have eaten some shit on a late show, a late Friday night show, to be able mm-hmm. to call yourself like a comedian worth your weight. And I was like, yeah, because I was eating shit on Friday late shows. And I was like, you're right, Bill. And then you see some of these specials and you're like, you know what? No, I disagree with you. I disagree with a younger version of myself. There is a way to have your cake and eat it too. You can tell stories that reach out to people and, as you say, connect with people, and they can still be deeply entertaining and very, very funny. And I think Mike Birbiglia proved that beyond a doubt.
I mean, I think the first instance of that kind of thing, it even predates the alt scene. It's like Richard Pryor, Live on the Sunset Strip, where it's like a two-part, and it's actually, I draw a direct comparison between that and Nanette, because it's structured the same way. You have the old Richard Pryor at the top doing his old character work, doing his old jokes. Then this clean break when he gets into the confessional component talking about that. And it's, so it's not a new thing. It's just, it's a forgotten art. And Mike just brings it back in an incredible way.
You're so right to bring up Richard Pryor there. That was incredible confessional comedy, very raw, very like painful. Right?
Yeah.
Grew up in a brothel. The stuff he saw, no child should really have been seeing. That's not an environment for a kid to grow up in. That's not a loving, supportive household. And for him to come out and still be this incredible success. Now, of course, the pain, I'm not a therapist, but the amount of cocaine he was doing and the amount of women he was, you know, sort of shacking up with probably is a direct result to the upbringing he had. But yeah, that comedy, the guy who is regarded as one of the greatest comedians, if not the greatest comedian of all time, had a style that is absolutely this alt style, this storytelling style. And I talk about a guy who could live in the silences.
Yeah.
I mean, people would just watch him think, maybe take a drag of a cigarette, maybe just think, stroke his chin. Wipe his lips. They're just watching. What's he going to say next? Right. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Right. Like, I mean, Dave Chappelle also has that incredibly compelling presence, but his storytelling never gets to, you know, you think it is. You think Dave's stories are really honest. And you're like, wow, we're having a real serious moment with Dave. And then he goes, and then I jerked off in a plant. And then you're like, what, dude? Yeah, what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those people who I'm like, I appreciate the talent, but there's certain things where I'm just like, yeah, I know people consider you like GOAT and all that, but no Richard Pryor. he's no Richard Pryor.
No Richard Pryor.
Yeah, but he's a better comedian than I'll ever be. So respect where it's due. But
of course, But just talking about this storytelling style and these sort of solo show. And it was interesting. I don't know if you know who Nish Kumar is out of England. Pretty terrific dude. And I really like that guy also in England. You know, these are like actual, some of these guys are actual political commentators. Like they are searing political commentators. You have like, for every one John Oliver and every one, he's British too. For every one John Stewart, let's say, that we have, they have like 20 guys who are willing to mercilessly mock politicians and companies and organizations, you know? And, I'm sure that's on the decline as more of these companies buy up the networks on which they're making, right? It's on the decline. But they're willing to do it. I remember Nish Kumar, definitely one of these guys. Everybody's a target. Every company's a target for him. Mm-hmm. He said, the first time I heard Mike Birbiglia, I was like, oh, why is he doing his Edinburgh show in Seattle? Like, it's such a classically British format.
Yeah.
Right? And I think many of us would agree the British know a thing or two about some good entertainment for whatever they lack in 100 different other areas. Yeah. As far as entertainment goes, they know how to tell a good story and a very funny story. And Mike said, you just paid me a very high compliment. To be like, you know, why is he running his Edinburgh show? In other words, why he's doing British style comedy. And Mike was like, I'm just doing what I love to do and what I wanted to do. I don't know if he had any British influence. I can't remember where that interview went in that regard, but I remembered like, this is a format that they all do there. Yeah. And when I was in Edinburgh, I did go to a couple of solo shows. And I think Mike could go toe to toe with some of the best, you know. I mean, there's some real like ridiculous masters of the form, the Billy Connollys of the world, you know. But I think Mike Birbiglia could be regarded as one of the greatest storytellers ever.
I totally agree. And as we said earlier, like he's just every time he brings out a new story, it's just that much more powerful. Well,
what was the venue in Toronto, Matthew? I want to ask where you saw his latest, The Old Man in the Pool.
Oh, it's next to, I think it's the, it's not the, what was the Hummingbird Center, but it's the theater right across the street from that.
Appel?
Yeah, Ruma Appel.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so that's a good venue. I saw Rami Yusuf there in October. It's not bad for comedy. You feel like it's an intimate space, even though it holds quite a few people. Yeah.
It's like a nice middle ground because, I mean, I used to go to Just for Laughs in Toronto before. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll be back. Maybe it won't be. I'll cross that bridge. But
you won't say rest in peace.
Yeah, I'm hoping for the best. We'll see. But I'd go, they have the Queen Elizabeth, they'd use that a lot. And it was just, it's such a big space.
Rectangle.
And it just sucks the laughs out of a show. So when they started moving more towards the center of town and started using these theaters downtown, I was like, this is just, it's such a nice change because I love comedy clubs, but that's such a different vibe than a Mike Birbiglia kind of show. You need that little bit more space. You need that little bit more room to breathe to really live in the moment, I find. It elicits a kind of a different reaction. And I mean, and not better or worse, it's just different. And I think that's it. Something people get confused about often. They'll say, oh, well, you only like, I'm like, no, I love a good ruckus night in a comedy club with some side splitters and bang, 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 bang. But also it's nice to sit in a chair where I can not worry and not be distracted by the things spearing me in the side because they're cheap chairs and the oppressive atmosphere of a basement. It is such a great space. I saw Pete Holmes there as well, not too long ago. And he was great.
I have this dream to do a show in Montreal. The idea was to do it in conjunction with Just for Laughs. The dream will have to take on a new form, it seems. But there's a place called Le Jésus. And Le Jésus is named after these sort of Jesuit. I guess it was a Jesuit monastery. Mm-hmm. And so the walls are all concrete bricks, massive bricks. It's all brick lined and beautiful seating. And we did a show there once called Kosher Jokes for the Halalidays, this Jewish Muslim compilation of comedy night. And I've dreamt of going back there and doing a show there because the show where this is performed, my girlfriend's boyfriend, that space, it looks like Le Jésus. And I was wondering first time I saw it, I was like, is that Montreal? Of course it wasn't. Seattle. But I have a dream to perform there again, just sort of modeling things after Mike Birbiglia and being like, okay, I'm going to rent this space or somehow make this work and figure that out.
Well, if you do that, I will be on the train to Montreal to catch that show 100%.
I should also do it in Toronto, so you don't have to get on a train, Matthew.
Right? No, well, hey, any opportunity. My mom and dad were both raised in Montreal, so any opportunity to get back out to Montreal is wonderful. I went to some concerts over the summer in Montreal, and it's weird. It's just the audiences are so much more alive in Montreal than Toronto. Saw the same bands in both cities and it's just like, wow, it's just this completely different energy. It's a beautiful city.
There's the joie de vivre is the term, just the joy of life. Mm-hmm. And you work to live, not live to work. I think that mantra is still at large. And I think the other thing is, man, I was just reading about, I wasn't just reading about it, but I was just thinking about this thing that I read a few years ago, these chefs who left London and moved to Dublin or Northern England and now not being choked by these oppressive rents, they're just able to really do what they always want to do, which is just explore great food. And you know what I mean? And you forget what that does, like what the cost of living does. And I think that has a massive effect here in Toronto. You just, everything just feels oppressive in some way, unless you're quite wealthy. And then the wealthy people, they never look like they're having fun, really, unless it's, you know, on a boat or on the ocean for Instagram. Yeah. But something about Montreal, I feel that too. Any outdoor jazz fest venue, if you just planted me in there and you said, okay, open your eyes, are you in Montreal or Toronto? You would just know. You would just know. You would look around. You don't have to hear French. It's not even about that. You'd be like, just the way people are moving and engaging with these artists, just, you know, physically and like in their eyes, there's life. And I totally know it. I know it well, and I miss it. And now you've made me sad. We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get back to Montreal.
Yeah. Now, if people wanted to find you online, find your podcast, where could they look?
Yeah, standupali.com is my website. Instagram, X, Facebook, it's all standupali. I'm a branding genius. Yeah. I really wish that was true. I've done nothing good since that one decision. standupali also went calendar, show dates, that kind of stuff. And I don't know when this will air exactly, Matthew, but go to CBC Gem. You can see episodes of Sort Of and of Run the Burbs and of some of the stuff that I'm particularly proud of. And the podcast that I mentioned to you was Doctor versus Comedian, which is a weekly podcast where my buddy talks about medical issues and I try to challenge him on that. And then we talk about entertainment issues, some entertainment issues, sometimes related, sometimes not.
Great. Well, thank you again for joining me. And
my pleasure.
Have a great day.
Thanks for taking me down memory lane here, Matthew.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.